Hello, and welcome to episode 53 of the Movie Marathoners podcast. I'm your host, Mati, and joining me today is Josh from the Media Music Podcast. Thanks for joining me, Josh. How's your 4th of July weekend going?
It's kind of interesting. I'm in the middle of moving personally, and then this weekend was spent moving my brother too, so it's kind of just been physical working and stuff, so it is what it is.
Yeah, moving is the worst. I moved like last year and I never want to do it again, but I'm sure I'll be moving again, so I'm sorry you've been dealing with that.
It is what it is.
Your brother at least helped you move, right?
Kind of not. Well, it's not his fault. My family's moving to Orlando, but he's like at the age where he's starting his own life, so to go from New York to Florida would have been a lot to just ask him to help out with a whole trip and like stop working just to help us move. So yeah, he kind of got out of that.
Okay. Well, he definitely owes you like one move then, right?
Yeah, I definitely somewhere down the line.
So this week, Josh is going to join me to discuss two very different musical films. First, we'll talk about the recording of Hamilton that came onto Disney Plus on July 3rd. And then we'll review the Netflix comedy Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga. It's a mouthful, so it's probably the last time I'm going to say the full name of the movie. We'll just call it Eurovision. So what we'll do today is first, we'll have a spoiler-filled discussion about the Hamilton film. We'll talk spoilers just straight from the get-go, given that it is a hugely popular musical about American history. So not too many spoilers there if you know American history. Then we'll move on to a spoiler-free discussion of Eurovision before running into spoiler territory where we can talk about that film freely. And since we are doing a double review, we'll just be skipping the point two section this week to give us more time to talk about these films specifically. But Josh, I want to start off the podcast by asking you a little bit about your background with music, and specifically music in media, such as, you know, film and television, the things we'll be talking about today. What got you interested in that particular area of music?
So I have been playing multiple instruments and singing since forever, really. It was just something, one of the few things that I felt like super passionate about. As I got older, I kind of just picked up more and more instruments. And honestly, the only area I could see me really investing time in other than music was film and video games and TV, stuff like that. So it was just the perfect kind of combination when I found a program at University of Miami where I currently go. And it's specifically for writing music, like to picture and to like commercials and video games and things like that. So it was just kind of like the perfect combination. And one of the few undergrads that actually lets you do that. That's how I really like understood what I wanted to do. And then now I'm just running my own podcast, literally just talking about that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a rat race running the podcast. But that's really cool. I mean, I've always been very bad at analyzing music. So I'm very glad that you are here to kind of help bring some credibility to this episode of the podcast, because a lot of music I just kind of look at and go, oh, I like that and don't know why. Kind of like the beat, and it takes me like maybe 50 times for me to finally get some of the words of a song. So I'm sure my girlfriend can attest, I've been singing just like the first maybe two lines of every Hamilton song over and over and over again for the last 2 days. So yeah. It should be interesting.
I'm glad to help out.
Yeah. So first, let's go ahead and read a synopsis of Hamilton. The synopsis is, the real life of one of America's foremost founding fathers and first Secretary of the Treasury, Alexander Hamilton. This was filmed live on Broadway from the Richard Rogers Theater with the original Broadway cast. Hamilton stars Lin-Manuel Miranda, Daveed Diggs, and Leslie Odom Jr. It is written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, and the film is directed by Thomas Kail.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show.
The $10 founding father without a father got a lot farther by working a lot harder, by being a lot smarter, by being a self-starter, daughter.
To your union, revolution,
So this Hamilton film is not an adaptation of the stage show. It is actually just a filmed version of the stage play. It was edited together from three performances in New York City in 2016. So we have the original Broadway cast members. So I would liken this to something like a concert film, which means that for many, many people, this is the closest thing that they'll ever get to seeing Hamilton live, and certainly the closest thing that they'll ever get to seeing Hamilton with its original cast members. So this film was originally scheduled for a theatrical release on October 15th of 2021, but was pushed up and released onto Disney Plus due to the impact of COVID-19 on both the film industry and the Broadway stage productions, which apparently will not be opening again until 2021. So Josh, let me start by asking you, was this the first time that you saw Hamilton?
No, kind of. In its entirety, yes. It happens to just like, it's kind of cliche for like theater fans to like say Hamilton's their favorite musical, but it kind of just, I just love it so much. It's kind of like my favorite, and I can't believe I've never seen it, and now like probably will never see it. But I saw it because I had a friend who is actually up and coming, has always been working like his whole like student career, like trying to get into Broadway and doing certain shows and things. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of seen some things through him of like, he's gotten access to certain things. So I've seen some things, but to actually see like the actual full production altogether, like how it was kind of meant to be seen, is very cool for me. So that's the first time.
So do you mean that you've seen kind of recordings of the show before, like backstage recordings or something?
Things like that, where it was more like right when it was coming out, and it's been like 5 years since that. I don't remember exactly what I watched. I just remember seeing maybe rehearsal footage or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. So that's always been what's been in my head when I listen to the soundtrack, because for 5 years I've still been listening to the whole soundtrack. But it's nice to see like a full production finally.
Yeah, well, since this is a sing-through musical, you kind of can almost get, in some way, the entire story and the entire musical through just the soundtrack, which I think is a very nice part of the accessibility of this film.
Yes, exactly.
But, okay, so this was your very first time seeing it all the way through, and you saw it through the film medium. As a film experience, what were your thoughts on it, just overall?
It was very much what I expected, because obviously going into it, knowing that, like you already mentioned, it wasn't like a theatrical version, it was straight up just performances of the show. That was very much what I expected. Yeah, it was just kind of an immersive, I guess, view of the show, how it is, really. The different camera angles and everything, I guess, add to that. That's something you wouldn't get watching it, you know, in the theater.
Yeah, I mean, it is just a wonderful show. I mean, so in some context, just watching the show is incredible. It's a phenomenal feat of creativity. I mean, I don't think there's a way to undersell it. I think, honestly, I wasn't really versed in Hamilton. I had never seen it. I had never really listened to the soundtrack and maybe heard bits and pieces of songs here and there. But I was a little worried that I was going to be a little disappointed by this, but even on the film, you can just tell how amazingly, astonishingly good everything about the musical is. The performances, just the amount of words that Lin-Manuel Miranda has to be saying on a daily basis while he was on this show, it's insane. But I thought it worked pretty well as a film. I think there are certainly things that you lose in watching it as a film. You're not in the theater. So it does take a little bit away from kind of the seeing the entire stage company moving with the synchronized choreography, kind of letting it soak in, letting the songs kind of overtake you in the moment. So there was a bit of a disconnect there, but it didn't do anything to really like detract from the experience, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would think that's probably accurate. Obviously, neither of us got to see it live, but for me, like there wasn't a point of it watching it where I thought, oh man, I really wish I saw this. Like obviously I wish I saw it live, but there was no part where I was like, this missed and I hope it was better live. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There wasn't, it didn't feel like you were explicitly missing anything important.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons that is that, like you said, the camera angles, they had so many different camera angles and it was mm-hmm. edited together from different shows. So it was a relatively dynamic movement. So even if, you know, you can't tilt your head to focus on one thing, the camera does that for you. And even in some certain contexts, it actually gives you a better image than what you would probably see unless you were front row, you know.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. If I did end up seeing it, I probably wouldn't have seen it as close as the camera got. So
yeah, I'd be in the rafters. Like, what do you say?
Yeah.
But I mean, the other thing too is that I think the audio is pretty good. Thank God for subtitles. I actually was able to follow everything, which I've been told is kind of difficult seeing Hamilton the first time.
Yeah. So that's interesting you say that, because I originally, when Hamilton first came out, I want to say it was like sophomore year of high school for me. Every single person in the music wing was just constantly singing it or playing it. So I had no problem with words whatsoever. but that's interesting that like somebody for the first time or like for a newer perspective, that might actually be an issue. I've never even thought about that, because they speak so quickly and that's the whole story is in the music.
Yeah. I mean, it's fortunate that it's not necessarily like overly complex language or anything. It's very mm-hmm. up-to-date mm-hmm. and modern language, which definitely helps.
That's true, too.
And if you're used to listening to music and, you know, just understanding music in that context, in like a more modern context, it's not like this is Shakespeare or anything like that.
Yeah.
Not to say that it's not amazing. Just to be clear, you know, I mean, this is... It really is an awesome show, and I think as a film, it works pretty well. There are moments where I think that sometimes the audio could be bumped up a little bit, as the dialogue is a little drowned out in some of the music, okay. because obviously, you know, we're playing live music at the same time as the actors are singing on stage. So there were certain times where I was like, I can't quite make out what's happening, things like that. But I mean, overall, you know, no complaints.
Gotcha. So much less of the actual production, maybe even, and then more so the adaptation of just turning it into a film.
Yeah.
I mean, possibly the same problem like live when you're watching it. Like, I'm sure live too, there's going to be some words that you miss.
It was also interesting to watch Lin-Manuel actually get tired throughout the film. You can tell that his voice yeah. is much stronger in the first half of the musical than in the second half. And I think part of that is that, you know, he's aging as a character or whatever. But yeah, after you say so many words, your voice is going to get tired. And it's not quite as strong of a voice in those back parts as when you listen to mm-hmm. it on the soundtrack or whatever.
Yeah, that's definitely something I definitely didn't pick up on, like just watching this my first time through. But that you mentioned that, I mean, Lin is a fantastic, extremely multi-talented like musician and creator, but I really don't think that he's a serious singer too.
No, yeah.
Yeah. So that, I mean, could easily play into it as well. Carrying the whole show, like not carrying it as in, like it's only good because of him, but like carrying like so many of the lines and so much of the songs and so much of the music, he's out there like 90% of the show. And on top of that, not being like a trained singer, like maybe some of the other characters were, that totally makes sense that the fatigue would actually be an issue you could actually pick up on.
Right. And it's not that he's a bad singer by any means, but when you compare him to people like Leslie Odom Jr. or Philippa Sue,
yeah.
there's quite a distinction and you
exactly.
go, oh, he's not the best, but I mean, that doesn't really ruin the musical in any meaningful way or anything like that. It's just, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
So do you have a favorite song from Hamilton?
I don't know if I have a favorite, like one song. I have three that, by far, like, I'll listen to those any day of the week, like,
yeah.
just with my regular music, too. Like, not even, I don't really listen to, like, show tunes or anything. I'll just mm-hmm. listen to them as I'm listening to everything else. Washington on Your Side is awesome. One Last Time, I love the way George Washington's voice sounds. I think it's so incredible. And then was the other, oh, Raise a Glass to Freedom. That's my third. That one's just like a beautiful song, like lyrics and the harmony and everything about it. That just kind of like gives me chills every time.
Yeah, those are all great ones. I think one of my favorite ones is Jonathan Groff's songs as King George III. He's probably one of my favorite characters in the whole musical.
Incredible.
So funny.
Incredible. Also, it's crazy that he never really interacts with anybody either. It's just kind of like an aside every single time he's out there, like just singing his like monologue as like a response to what's been going on, but from the point of view of England. I think that's just a very clever device that Lynn used.
Yeah, I like that the film, or what, you know, I keep saying the film, but the stage show or whatever this yeah. is, I really like that it manages to keep a sense of humor to it. And mm-hmm. it's also a modern sense, a modern sensibility
yeah,
to humor. But that's definitely my favorite character. My other favorite character is Jasmine Cephas Jones as Peggy Shuler.
Peggy.
I know that's like a meme out there, or like it's a thing that Peggy, but man, I just love her popping in screaming Aunt Peggy and then never showing up for the rest of the musical. But
what happens? I need to know what happens to her.
Yeah, so I looked it up after the musical, and she marries some dude who is, you know, more prominent in politics than her sisters, or she was never as involved in politics as her sister, so that's why she kind of was just not there. But justice for Peggy.
Yeah, important enough to like just be introduced to like have us think about it.
We definitely need a spinoff of Hamilton just called Peggy, and Peggy. It's just about her her story.
I love it.
Do you have any favorite characters?
I love David Diggs' characters that he plays, both I think he plays Lafayette and then he plays Jefferson too, I think.
Yeah,
he does such a great job playing the French character and then immediately not playing like any sort of accent. It's so interesting how they cast Hamilton.
Yeah.
I love how it, like, absolutely no requirement of looking or having any like physical portrayal of the people that we're talking about other than their costumes. I think that's so important for the fact of like what we were saying about how it's very modernized.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very cool thing they did. And I love David Diggs's just acting. I think those two roles he did very well.
Yeah, and he brings a lot of the more hip-hop and rap style of lyrics and music. You know, I think he's probably on the lower end of the people in the cast in terms of like a powerful voice. So he does a lot more of the sing-talking, which is just a ton of fun. There's a lot of really great moments that he gets to kind of react to people. Like when he finds out that Hamilton was cheating on his wife and he goes, what?
Yep.
Very funny.
Yes. I think I heard that like, and this comes as no surprise like whatsoever, but I think I heard he got like the Guinness World Record of shattering, like absolutely shattering like the fastest speech or something in like a Broadway show.
Oh, really?
Or something with Guns and Ships.
Yeah, that's the Lafayette speech, right?
Yep. The Lafayette
great.
Like big feature. Yeah. Yep. And I'm pretty sure he got like awarded from like Guinness World Records like fastest, I don't even know what they would call it, but I guess just fastest like lines delivered in a show. Yeah.
It's oddly specific world record to have, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I guess rap is just really not prominent in Broadway yet.
Yeah, and I mean, going back to that modernization of the musical, I think it's very timely for this, you know, film experience to come out at this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's really interesting to think about the establishment of America and how that was done by this group of individuals, many of whom were immigrants, and they were kind of working outside of the laws established by their individual society. And, you know, when you think about what's going on now in the country, there's this discussion going on about, you know, all the riots and everything else. And a lot of people are questioning whether that is the right way to incite change. But then, you know, it's these types of protests and these certain acts of aggression and unrest that's really similar to the things going on in this film and going on in the establishment of America. So it's just really interesting to see that parallel now and to be like, oh yeah, that, why are people saying that this is this crazy thing going on? This is exactly what happened when we were upset with our leaders and, you know, whatnot in the establishment of America as a society.
Yeah, I think you can definitely, and it's probably very much by design on Lynn's part, that there's just very stark parallels. And again, with like the casting of just having people from all walks of life, I think it makes it that much more poignant with everything.
Absolutely. This is just really is a great musical and a great film.
Yeah.
On that note, do you think that, you know, there's been a lot of talk recently about how people think that this could win awards and that whether the Hamilton film should be eligible for awards. What do you think?
So that would be like movie awards, right?
Yeah, because
like, we're done talking about like Tonys, and because that would be like 5 years ago when it won those awards, right?
Right, yeah. So in whatever context that you would now perceive this as a film or a television movie or whatever, do you think that this does count as something that could be eligible for awards?
I feel like it shouldn't for the reason that it's just footage from what already won awards in its own medium. I feel like if it were like a more straightforward, like what is, like if there's some award for like what is the most popular or influential like thing to stream nowadays, like sure, maybe that could get it. But I feel like it shouldn't win like an Oscar or something. I don't know. Because you know what I mean? It's not a theatrical rendition. It's just completely footage from a play.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, it doesn't mean that it's in any way bad or anything, but it is certainly not made to be it is made to be a film, but, you know, it's sort of like awarding it twice feels a little weird to me.
Yeah. That's what it is. It's that, I also like wouldn't feel bad at all too if it's not allowed because they absolutely like cleaned up Tony's when they had the chance.
Yeah. So it's like, it's not like they had their chance for awards recognition.
Exactly. So I wouldn't feel bad if they absolutely like weren't. But also just the fact that like it accomplished what it set out to do in my mind. And unless they were to actually reimagine it for the format of film, then obviously, yes, that should be eligible. But as it stands now, I just don't think so.
Yeah, I think there's certain like Emmy categories and maybe even some Golden Globe categories that are given to like live variety shows or things like the Oscars and the Golden Globe ceremonies themselves are sometimes nominated for Emmys and things like that. So I could imagine it falling into that category, like some sort of thing where it's competing against other concert films or things like that. But yeah, I mean, especially because this doesn't even have any backstage. It's not like a documentary or anything. So it's great that this is out here. And I think it's awesome that Disney just outbid a whole bunch of people for it. But it's great that they decided to put it out, especially nowadays.
Perfect timing.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, but I mean, yeah, I don't think that in terms of awards eligibility, it really has a place. But something that people have also been talking about is how there are tons and tons of other musicals on Broadway that are probably already pre-recorded and filmed and things like that, and that people are clamoring for them to be dropped and to do something very similar in this format with other musicals. Are there particular musicals that you think would be really well done in this format?
That's a very good question. I am probably the worst musical theater fan that exists because I listen to so much musical theater music and have seen so few shows. Like, I've seen a lot of shows, but the ones that people are talking about, like, constantly. Like, for example, Sarah Bareilles did Waitress, and going to music school, it's all, like, so many people just couldn't stop talking about that show. Like, you would hear the music be performed in classes, like, extremely, extremely well-received musical, and all I know is music from it. Like, I haven't seen... So, like, imagining a musical that's more recent that could be done the same way that Hamilton was, I unfortunately probably don't really have an idea. I will say I've seen Dear Evan Hansen, but I don't think that would actually work out as well for the fact that the set and everything is extremely minimal. Mm-hmm. So it's very much like stand and deliver. That being said, though, with not a lot of things to do at the moment and a lot of people are, you know what I mean? Like, just yeah, give me things. Whatever you got. Yeah, just if you have it, what else am I going to do? So I'd be glad to watch it. I don't know how successful it would be. But from the standpoint of like somebody who's just like kind of would take any content he can get right now, I would just love if any Broadway show, especially since they're out until at least 2021, I feel like they should just put up whatever they can, really.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. The ones that come to mind, I mean, again, I don't know too much about Broadway musicals. I've only seen one Broadway musical, which was The Lion King. I think that actually would be pretty cool to see filmed. It's got a lot of dynamic sets and a lot of these crazy Definitely. Costumes and everything Yep. that would look really good on film, especially because it is a little different from the actual Lion King movie. You know, the animated one, you definitely can't say that about mm-hmm. the live action one. There's actually a reason to see the Lion King musical. It adds some content and there's some new songs and things
100%.
Like that. Yeah. And then the other one, just for like a personal reason that I am told again and again that I would enjoy Wicked and that I should see it. Oh. And I've never seen it. So I think that would be a nice one to see filmed as well.
I think I'm just having a bad day remembering things. I've seen both of those, and I completely agree. Those would look awesome. Their sets are great. They got enough going on visually. I think that would work pretty well.
Yeah. I think this experience would also be really cool as a VR experience. I mean, I think you would need a ton of cameras and a ton of different angles, and it probably wouldn't work too well if you were taking multiple edits from different shows. But imagine being able to kind of like sit in a theater seat and then be able to crane your head and look around at the set as you're watching the film. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, that would be great. And what we talked about with like, if you want to hone in on like a certain part of it, then you can pay attention to like whatever part of it that you want without having to worry about the camera angles. That would be awesome. And that's actually, I actually heard something very similar about concert experiences, because classical like music scene and live performances with like orchestras and everything mm-hmm. obviously are taking a huge hit, because the orchestra itself needs to be a large group of people sitting very close to each other,
right?
And so then the audience obviously is like same situation. But I heard rumors that possibly, like, if everybody follows guidelines and we can get an orchestra together, that some places want to try to do a 3D, like, videoed music hall so you can experience, like, a concert again.
That would be so cool.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about VR technology, so I don't know how feasible that is. But, you know, mm-hmm. if they could get it done, I think that would be really cool to just kind of get that more immersive experience.
I don't know much about the technology about it either, except, I mean, I've seen stuff on like Facebook with like 3D videos and things where I feel like, I could be completely wrong, but I feel like there's this special camera that's not even that expensive, because I think they do it for like realty stuff too, where it like to show tours of houses and things. Like, but you literally get this camera or rent it out even cheaper, and I've seen like a ton of people just post like 3D videos on Facebook, so it can't be that like.
Yeah, if crazy aunts can do it, then
yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, the giant symphonies and Broadway should be able to figure it out for sure.
100%.
So let's go ahead and wrap up our discussion on Hamilton. It feels a little weird to ask for a score for this film, but it is my podcast, so I'm going to do it anyways. So, Josh, why don't you just summarize your thoughts on the film and give a score out of 10 for Hamilton, the film, Hamil film, or whatever people call it.
Hamil film. All right. So, knowing the music like the back of my hand now, because it's been out for 5 years, it's very nice to see a performance of it where, like with every Broadway show, there's that push and pull where they add their own inflections and it's always slightly different with live performances. So like trying to sing along too, and like they add their own like character more into it than like a studio version, is just like refreshing to finally get like a live something you can actually like, that's like breathing and living. So that was very cool. And I mean, the videography and everything was like, I'm not like, I've taken classes and stuff, but I'm not like in no means an expert or even a step below that, understanding like different angles and things, but it looked perfectly fine to me. I didn't feel unimmersed by it at all. So, I mean, rating it is interesting because it might be a little less so about the actual content of it, because if I'm just rating content of it, I don't see really a single thing wrong with it. I hate to give out like a 10 out of 10. I feel like that would make me like, I feel like that would just discredit like me rating things if I'm just handing out 10s. So I guess taking everything into consideration, I'll go 9.7.
9.7?
9.7.
Wow. Okay. So 0.3 just for...
0.3 because what would have made it better is if I was there, and you can tell that you're not there, but it's not their fault.
Yeah.
So it's out of their control. That's the sword I will fall on.
Perfectly fair. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll just mirror pretty much everything that Josh said. It's a great experience. I think as a film, I was worried that it was just kind of going to be this static looking at a stage for 2.5 hours. But they actually find a lot of ways to keep it dynamic and keep it fresh, and it moves around a lot. So it's a very engaging performance and a very engaging film. I think that there's, you know, if you haven't seen Hamilton, there's zero reason to not see this, unless you hate Disney so much that you're not going to see one of the best Broadway musicals ever. But even if you have seen Hamilton, I think it's a great way to kind of get a very front of the row and very personal experience with all of these actors doing something that is basically impossible to see anywhere else because they're no longer on Broadway. I think it's also cool that the film has a built-in intermission. I found that that worked perfectly for the streaming experience. So I watched with my girlfriend and her parents and everybody at the intermission. We paused it, we got up, we made some food, people went to the bathroom. And I think that that was a nice break for a 2.5 hour movie experience. So yeah, really just across the board, I thought it was fantastic. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
Awesome. I wanted to make mention of one thing, which is that I don't know if you know about this, but there's the Hamilton mixtape out on like streaming services.
Huh. Yeah. What is that?
So what Lynn did was there are certain songs that didn't make the actual show that get performed. I think he does those ones. And then he, for the rest of them, it's famous artists that just perform songs from Hamilton, and they also put their own spin on it. So like Busta Rhymes and Black Thought from The Roots, they rap the intro to Hamilton, but they also make it a little bit more about equality and pro, like just like rights for immigrants. And like they take the different songs of Hamilton and the artists make it their own. Like Jimmy Fallon did the King James You'll Be Back, which is hilarious. So it's like stuff like that, and you can get it anywhere that like stuff is streaming. And I listen to that pretty frequently, like almost as much as the regular show.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Josh. I'll definitely check that out. That seems sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to the Netflix film Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga. So first, I'll just give a synopsis of Eurovision. When aspiring musicians Lars and Sigrid are given the opportunity to represent their country at the world's biggest song competition, they finally have a chance to prove that any dream worth having is a dream worth fighting for. Eurovision stars Will Ferrell, Rachel McAdams, and Dan Stevens. It is written by Will Ferrell and Andrew Steele, and it is directed by David Dobkin.
Ever since we were children, we've had one dream.
Winning
the Eurovision Song Contest.
All right, everyone. I am Lars. This is Sigrid. We are Fire Saga.
Wow.
wants to hear a Eurovision song?
All of Iceland think we are a joke.
That's not true.
And my father is ashamed of me.
No, he's not.
He looked me into the eyes and said, I am ashamed of you.
Maybe he was drunk.
He said, and you might think that I'm drunk, but I am dead sober.
So Eurovision Song Contest is a yearly contest that takes place in Europe where every country submits an act to represent their country, and then all these countries perform on stage, and then a winner is voted on by the people and by the countries or whatever. And I think most of the winners go on to achieve basically the same level of fame and success as, you know, your average American Idol winner. But like American Idol, there are a few people who have become quite famous. I think the most famous winners are probably ABBA in 1974, and then in 1988, Celine Dion won for Switzerland. As a kid who spent every summer in Finland, I would actually hear quite a few of these songs, you know, on the radio or wherever, and there was a time where I was actually pretty invested in learning who the winner was each year. So, Josh, is the Eurovision Song Contest something that you're familiar with, or was this the first time you'd ever heard of it?
This is definitely the first time I'm hearing of it. And actually, when you reached out to me about possibly covering this, I had no idea what it was. I thought you were talking like, let's cover... I mean, it turned out to be an actual contest, but I thought you were like, let's cover what happened at this contest like last weekend or something.
Yeah.
So I was very in the dark about the whole thing.
Well, I'm glad that you were like willing to do it, even though you had no idea what it was. So thank you.
No problem. I definitely saw that there is a new Will Ferrell movie on Netflix, and I knew I wanted to watch it. I just had no idea what it was called or what it was about.
Yeah. So this came onto Netflix pretty randomly. I think it was supposed to come out earlier in May, which would have been in line with the actual Eurovision contest. But that was obviously canceled or whatever. So we got this in June. So what are your thoughts on the film just overall?
In general, like I said before, anything that comes out now, I'm glad to just watch it and give literally everything a chance to just, like, why not? What else am I going to be doing?
Yeah.
I'm not setting the bar so low, but I was definitely like pleasantly surprised because like I feel like with certain Will Ferrell movies, it can either be so weird that it misses or so weird that it's like perfect and you didn't know you like needed it. But I think this definitely like isn't one of my favorite movies by him, but it was definitely much like I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought, because just like looking at, I guess, the thumbnail or whatever they put, like, you're like, okay, this looks pretty zany. It looks like they're like dressed up like Vikings. I have no idea what this is going to be about. but I was definitely pleasantly surprised. It's definitely a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to describe the film, is that it's just a fun watch. This feels like a comedy film that is just one of those classic Will Ferrell comedy films from the mid-2000s. Like, it feels completely ripped out of that period of time in all of its sensibilities, in the way that the story is structured, in the way that the characters relate to each other. It almost has this kind of nostalgic and comforting feel to it, because it does feel very similar to things like Blades of Glory.
Yeah, I would second that like very hard. It's like that same, this is like the universe we're in right now, and it may look weird to you, but to everybody in it, it's completely normal.
Yeah. Yeah, this to me reminded me a lot of Pitch Perfect meets Blades of Glory. And Pitch Perfect is a film that I really, really like. I think it is another incredibly fun film to watch. But, you know, I think that film rides on its music in the same way that this does. I think that there are funny moments in this film, but really the main selling point to me is the music and like the idea of this music competition. It's almost a sports movie or like an underdog sports movie kind of thing, where you are just rooting for these people to win something, you know? And it's not like, it's not particularly a creative movie. It doesn't really do anything unconventional or anything like that. In fact, it fairly expertly leans on a lot of the tropes of this type of genre and this type of film.
Yep.
And like in terms of the characters, I don't really care about them. I like them enough to watch them, but it's all for me just kind of this window dressing to get to the next musical performance.
Yeah, I would very much agree with that. And when you said almost like one of those like sports movies, immediately I think of like Dodgeball, like with the zany, like, not that there's necessarily like a strong like antagonist really, but like there's with Dodgeball, it's just like this, like, you know, this person is just better, this team or whatever. And then you're rooting for the underdogs. That's just like, yeah, it's got like parallels like that in my mind.
So what are your thoughts on the music of the film? For me, I was like genuinely surprised at how much I liked most of the songs, but I've got a relatively low bar in what I'm willing to listen to. So what are your thoughts?
To me, it was very easy to tell, like, and this could be, I think this is exactly just what they were going for. But when you have actors and they're, from what I think they were, when you have the actors actually like singing the songs, they're going to be extremely, unless they're classically trained, like, what's his name? Wolverine. I can't think of his name right now.
Hugh Jackman?
Yeah, like with Hugh Jackman, who's actually a Broadway star, like they don't need the extra like production and ultra like tuning of their voices and things. But I think in the setting of this movie where it was like, it's a little bit retro and you have like that European like whole very like, this dream to be like pop stars, like be the next like big, like I guess like the next ABBA, that whole like very produced and synthesizer heavy, like very electronic music does fit. It was a little bit like jarring to me at first. I was like, okay, this is almost like comical, like to the fact that like the vocals and everything were like just so produced. But then like I kind of realized, I was like, okay, wait, this is actually kind of the vibe of the genre of music you would be hearing. So at first I was like a little bit put off, but then I was like, wait, this is a comedy and this is kind of like the genre of music they're going for. So it made sense to me after that. But like the songs itself were like good songs, like the quality of the like the lyrics and actual like songs and everything were actually very good.
Yeah, to that point, in terms of the kind of electronic-y, poppy type of music, I think the film does a pretty good job at capturing the spirit of the Eurovision Song Contest. And you kind of get a lot of these representative new musical numbers, but they feel very representative of past winners and some of the Eurovision staples. Like you've got the sexy, deep-voiced dude played by Dan Stevens playing this kind of just ridiculous song, but it does in a lot of ways feel like a song that is, I guess, like center of the lane enough for a ton of people from a ton of different countries to be like, yeah, I like that song.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something I just had to realize was that, wait a second, like maybe in the actual places that like this is taking place, that this is actually kind of like expected and like, what, like, obviously it's going to be dramatized to an extent, but it's dramatized from that like ultra electronic stuff that they would be hearing in the first place.
Yeah, I also love that Will Ferrell uses his actual voice in the songs, whereas Rachel McAdams and even Dan Stevens, they have singing doubles or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I know Dan Stevens was going to provide his voices, but because of COVID, they couldn't get him to, you know, record his voice. They used a different person. And then Rachel McAdams is just a Swedish singer, is using her voice. And I think that works a lot because you're expected to think that she is an incredible talent. And Will Ferrell is actually the one that just does the lyrics and stuff, but he's not actually supposed to be a good singer in the film. Rachel McAdams is the one with the talent. So I think it actually works. And like you said, the voices are very powerful and very strong.
Yeah. Now that you're saying that, that makes a lot of sense because I could definitely tell that Will Ferrell was singing. His character of his voice is completely there, which is perfect. Like everybody that is listening for Will Ferrell, just because the way he says things are like, is like half of him. And, but like, yeah, with Sigrid, she was supposed to be like prodigy voice, like, and I have no idea if, who is it, Rachel McAdams?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea what her actual voice sounds like, but that makes sense, like, for, obviously, for the prodigy voice to be a voice double makes sense.
Yeah, for a second, I thought that it was actually Demi Lovato giving her her vocals, because she has this very tiny part in the film.
Yes.
And I was like, why did she agree to do this? She's barely in the movie, but I guess we should talk a little bit more about that in spoilers. So let me just ask before we hop in, I think it's always interesting to ask this question in this time period. Maybe people who are listening are like, fuck, why does he keep asking this question? But how do you think the experience of this film would change in a theatrical setting? Like, does this film feel like one of those streaming service films, or does it feel like something that you would pay money to see in a theater?
Honestly, a little bit of both. Because if you told me the synopsis of the movie before I watched it, I would definitely think it was very like geared towards a Netflix like streaming thing, like a new David Spade movie that just came out on Netflix, yeah. Like something like that. But the fact that it's Will Ferrell, and I do tend to like him a little bit more than some of those comedic actors from around the same time period of like early 2000s stuff, I just think he's had a little bit better longevity than them. So I think I would have definitely given it a chance if I saw like a trailer that hooked me.
Yeah, I think the film also just does feel surprisingly cinematic. And not in the way that like Avengers Endgame or Portrait of a Lady on Fire or any of like of those types of movies feel cinematic, but it feels like a film that is made with a studio hand, in the sense that it is very mainstream and is made to make you laugh and made to make you have a good time. And I feel like a lot of people could enjoy it, and it would be a ton of fun to do that in a theater with people. And it also doesn't really feel like one of those Netflix films that is kind of just trying to throw everything at the screen, and, you know, some of it sticks, some of it doesn't. It genre mixes all the time, and it kind of just is all over the place. And if you like it, you like it. But like, I feel like this film just kind of knows what it wants to do, and it just commits to it. It stays in that genre. It commits to everything that we know about that genre. And, you know, if you compare it to a film, I don't know, did you see The Lovebirds? That was another Netflix film.
I don't think so.
Okay, so Eurovision was a film made by Netflix for Netflix, but The Lovebirds was a film that was made in, you know, made to be shown in the theaters, but was sold to Netflix because of the pandemic. And comparing those two films is really weird, because The Lovebirds feels like a very much like a streaming service movie, like half of an idea kind of just pasted together in this weird fashion. But this film feels very like, there's nothing missing to it. It knows what it's trying to do. Whether that thing is ambitious is another question. It's not. It's just pretty straight down the line. But I was surprised by how much it felt like a complete product.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Literally the first thing I noticed when watching it was that I expected it to be very, that like streaming subgenre of like what you were just describing. That was definitely what I went into it thinking. And then I remember one of the first like shots or something. I don't remember if it was the opening shot or not, but it was like this beautiful picturesque scene of Iceland at night, and there was snow falling. And I was like, wait, I didn't really think this was going to be like have like really nice shots in it as well. Like, I thought it was going to be Will Ferrell's face on the screen like the whole time, like doing his thing.
Yeah, for sure. Let's hop into spoilers quickly and just talk about some of the tiny things that maybe people don't want to hear if they haven't seen the film yet. But Josh, before you do that, let's go ahead and just summarize our thoughts on the film and give it a score out of 10.
So overall, absolutely perfect movie to come out right now, like something that will make you laugh and you can have fun with like multiple people watching, like obviously being smart and distancing if you don't see them every day. I'm not advocating for throwing those rules out the window. You didn't hear that from me.
Nice.
But like, fun to watch with like your immediate family right now. It's something to do, with the added bonus of it, I think it's a lot more than what it looks like when you click on it. There is a little bit of like what you said with staying true to a genre. I think it definitely, like, that is refreshing to, you're going to have fun watching the movie, but you can also have a cohesive story with it. There were definitely like certain parts that in general felt a little bit too zany to be maybe part of, like, if they wanted to make it more about like a hardship struggle contest with hints of comedy. Mm-hmm. It was definitely more like comedy based around this contest, which is totally fine. And I enjoyed it a lot. If I'm rating it, I'd probably give it a solid like 7 out of 10.
Great. And I'm just going to say similar things again. I'm not going to argue for the sake of argument's sake. I think the film is really good. It's a lot of, or I think the film is really funny. I don't know if it's really good. It's not a good film per se. I mean, I think the characters, like I said, their relationships are really manufactured and stupid. And you don't watch a film like this for the interpersonal drama, but they put it in there anyways because they kind of have to, so that it's not like, you know, just music scene after music scene after music scene. But the characters are funny enough, and the zaniness makes it so that it's clear that the focus of the film is not the drama or the relationship between Will Ferrell and Pierce Brosnan playing his dad, which is kind of ridiculous because they're like 6 years apart in age or something. But yeah, I mean, so this film, it's just a ton of fun. I think the music is really great. I think you are going to have a lot of fun if you watch it. But like, so can parents and kids and whatever. It's a very accessible film for a lot of people. So I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10.
All right.
So with that, let's hop into spoilers. Spoilers for Eurovision starting now.
That's my secret, Kat. I'm always angry.
So this isn't, you know, a film that really warrants a huge spoiler discussion because there really isn't a lot to that film or a lot mm-hmm. to what it's trying to say. But I just thought it would be fun to talk about some of the songs and stuff. There is a boat explosion in this movie that I totally called. I was like, they've got to get to the stage somehow. I know what's going to happen. They're not on the boat. The boat is going to explode.
That's great. I had a similar thought process, but I definitely wasn't analyzing it like too closely because I was like, wait a second. They lost. It made sense. I have no clue how they're going to make the contest. Are they going to like totally change the goal of the movie now? But yeah, you called it. I did not.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something that definitely would happen in a movie like this. In terms of songs, were there any ones that particularly stood out to you or any ones that particularly didn't work for you?
With songs, before I say that, one thing with songs was that I wish there were more songs.
Yeah.
Not that it needed more songs, but the fact that they were performing the same songs multiple times, whereas a movie like Spinal Tap, where they play a different song like throughout the movie, like every couple minutes, like, and each of them are hilarious. This could have had that, I think, as well. Like, if they had to do a different song at each stage of the competition, I think that would have added something. Because, like, obviously, like, I loved, my favorite song was probably the Russian guy's, like, I forget what it's called, something about the lion.
The Lion of Love or something?
Yeah, Lion of Love or something. That was just so funny to me. So that would probably have to be my favorite one. But, like, if he had to perform, like, a different one, because I think you see him perform twice, that would be great. Like, that's just another opportunity to make an even funnier like song for him.
Yeah, for sure. Because it is Eurovision, you know, they actually have to do that in Eurovision, but I agree that there definitely could be a way to mix things up. And I am glad that they didn't just do Double Trouble like 3 or 4 times. They at least played a different song at the end than the one that they played when the hamster wheel thing happened.
Oh my God.
But I really do like the Double Trouble. I think it's actually a great song. Like, if that came on, it's just a banger of a song.
Yeah, I was surprised that like, I was actually really into their song. I didn't think I would be.
So there was also a scene where they were at a party and there was this big sing-along song. A lot of the people in that sing-along thing were actual Eurovision contestants. Did you know that?
I had no clue. No clue.
Yeah, I figured because you had never heard of this competition. I wonder how many people watched this not knowing anything about Eurovision. But like for me, I thought it was pretty fun to see because, I mean, there were a ton of people that I had no idea. I'm not going to pretend like I'm a huge Eurovision fan or anything like that. But I did identify this one dude, Alexander Rybak, who he was very well known for having a song called Fairy Tale that won from 2012. Absolute banger. You should definitely check it out. But he plays a fiddle in it. And in the movie, he also has a fiddle that he's playing during the song, during the sing-along. So I got really excited when I saw that. I was like, oh shit, that's him. But yeah, tons of people in that were either past winners or people who kind of like were particularly famous afterwards for whatever reason. So it was a good little nod to it.
Yeah, that's something that I wish I would have known, because I think that adds just a little bit more like depth to this movie that otherwise is pretty just like a straightforward comedy. Like they actually did like a little bit of their research on the actual competition and like made sure to actually honor it in a way. So I think that's actually cool. And I wish I knew.
Yeah, I think it does. The film has a decent amount of heart and effort put into it in a way that I was a little bit surprised about. I thought this was going to be a relatively lazy thing, but you can tell that somebody in the production of this movie actually cares in some way about the Eurovision Song Contest. Mm-hmm. And Will Ferrell actually has said that like he was inspired to make this movie because he was introduced to the contest by his wife, who's Swedish or something. So like he's been watching it for years, apparently.
Gotcha. That's so interesting. Yeah, but dude, Ya Ya Ding Dong.
Yeah. Oh my God. That what a great amazing. Song. And I love the dude that just like aggressively yells at Will Ferrell every time. Like, no, you play Ya Ya Ding Dong.
Yes. But I think my favorite part of the whole movie is that after like, I mean, I will probably maybe mention this, but they like, you know, have a great reception at the contest. They ultimately don't win. But after all this stardom and everything that has now like come upon them, still, that guy is yelling at them, like, screw your song, I still want Ya Ya Ding Dong.
Yeah, it's probably very, like, frustrating for music people to handle in general. Just like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to play real Wonderwall. Good music. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, so the one other thing I wanted to mention about the film that I think is kind of interesting to think about is that in fashion with it being ripped out of the 2000s, it also does have some relatively dated gender roles that are very common in films and specifically comedy films from the 2000s time period. And in this film, you have this like, you know, much more talented female singer who is pining for this idiotic and kind of failure and not really any reason to really like him male lead. And the only way that she can finally reach success and become her true self and all that stuff is with the support of a man. I feel like that feels very regressive, not in a bad way, not in like an outright offensive or problematic way, but it did strike me watching the film when a lot of comedy films and a lot of films in general nowadays are a little bit more progressive in how they handle those things. And I think that in general, just the romantic subplot of this, I could have done completely without.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. The whole subplot with it was weird that I don't even remember her name. The one that was like into Will Ferrell.
Yeah, she was the Greek contestant. I can't remember her name.
Okay. Yeah, who was like who for some reason like knew the Russian guy very well. It was weird that whole like the four of them like navigating a weird, because like he had like an attraction to her, the Russian guy, to Sigrid, but felt completely one-sided, yet she would only like hang out with him throughout the movie, which was weird, like because she seemed like she was, I don't know, it felt very like forced, tropey. Not that like this movie needs to be analyzed like that deep, maybe if you're just trying to enjoy it, but it just felt like very unnatural that she would just keep hanging out with him. I don't know.
Yeah, and it also just kind of felt weird that she kept pining after Will Ferrell's character, and in this in the same way, like, why did she like him so much? Really the only reason is because he's the main character. And, like, you know, whatever, it's fine. That's, again, that's not why you watch a comedy film like this, so it doesn't really matter. But it does feel a little... This is certainly a film that... I keep trying to think of it or compare it to something like Booksmart, which is Booksmart, it has a lot of these zany kind of comedic beats, but it is also a film where you're interested in the characters and you're invested in their relationships and things like that, because it is a much more progressive film. In this one, it's just sort of like, oh, we have to have this thing in here because that's what comedy films have. It felt very like perfunctory.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that, like, it definitely didn't try to break a mold of any sort.
Yeah, for sure. And it got kind of like weirdly complicated when you found out that Dan Stevens' character was gay. I don't know how politically correct that was. I was trying to gauge based on the reaction of other people. I have no idea. But yeah, it's a comedy film, I guess.
I mean, definitely the line where he's like, where she like asks him and he's just like, oh no, we don't have gay people in Russia. I was just like,
yeah, that was funny.
I couldn't tell if it was like a political like statement kind of thing. It was just, it was very funny that like his confusion was because a government kind of forced view, I guess.
He was like, there's no gay people in Russia.
Yeah, and then obviously like, but all of his songs are performed with like half naked very muscular men. That just added to the funniness of his song. And then the whole like questioning of his sexuality kind of like, I was like, oh wait. Yeah. I didn't realize that was gonna be a thing.
yeah it did come out of nowhere, and I was like, how am I supposed to feel about this? But you know, I think, you know, whatever. I think we should just end it there. Is there anything else you wanted to mention about the film?
It was just very fun.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so this has been our review of Hamilton, as well as Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga. So Josh, thank you so much again for joining me today. I thought this was a blast.
Yeah, I had a great time, and this is like my first actual podcast collaboration, and it was great to be here.
Awesome. Is there anything you want to specifically plug?
Nothing like specific, just I'm running my own podcast for it's going to be about 3 months now. Started it, you know, when everything kind of went south and I had nothing else to do. And it's always been like a plan to start one. I've always had the means to do it. I just needed the right excuse. And I guess it's a positive to, like, it's nice to look at not everything is a negative right now.
Yeah, for sure.
So it was just something to work on and grow. So I do the Media Music podcast, where I talk about just music in different media, TV, film, video games, things like that. And I also provide music for free for people that like need it. Like, I've been writing intros for other podcasts, theme music, things like that. As long as you don't mind just mentioning that I did it, then I will make you free music.
All right, sweet. And how can people follow you on Twitter?
Twitter, it is actually everywhere. It's just Media Music Pod, MEDIA Music Pod.
All right, sweet. And I will provide a link to that in the show notes so that you can follow Josh.
Awesome.
The intro music for this episode is a piece called Work by Kevin MacLeod, and you can find more of his work at incompetech.com. If you'd like to keep up with this podcast and find out when we release new episodes, you can follow us on Twitter at MovieMaraPod or on Facebook at facebook.com/MovieMaraPod. That's Movie M-A-R-A Pod. And you can always reach out to us at our email, MovieMarathonersPod@gmail.com. You can find more episodes of this podcast on Podbean at MovieMarathoners.podbean.com. And we are also on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. So please subscribe or write a review if you like what we're doing, and any feedback you have to help improve the podcast is always appreciated. So thank you all for listening, and we hope you'll join us again next time for a TBD topic, as well as an announcement about the future of this podcast. So I'm excited to make that announcement. Stay tuned for that. Until then, bye.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7 Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.